Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Scott Ritter. And Scott is going to talk about President Biden's speech to the legislature, plus what's going on with Liz Cheney. Scott, let's start out with Biden. What'd you think of his speech to the Congress?
Well, his speech was, you know, it marked, it came just before the 100-day period of his presidency. And for whatever reason, 100 days has been thrown out there by the media and by the political establishment as a benchmark upon which, you know, the progress of an administration should be measured. And so Biden's speech, I think, was an effort for him to make the case that, you know, his administration is on the job, you know, doing the task, getting things done, you know, et cetera. Part and parcel of his overall strategy of trying to convince the nation that, you know, we're back, we're building back better, America's back. You know, the adults are in charge. We're done with that four-year experiment in populism. You know, whatever he wants to, you know, however you want to frame it, I think that's what he is, you know, is trying to do. The cornerstone of his speech was, you know, this American infrastructure plan, the American jobs program, he calls it. You know, the implication being that, if we spend trillions of dollars on what he defines as infrastructure, we will be putting not only making America better, but we'll be putting America to work. And so he was making a hard play for that. You know, he spoke to a fairly empty hall because of the pandemic. And, you know, even though the event was televised, the reality is he was really speaking to an audience of one. Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia, who in a 50-50 divided Senate, as a Democrat, if Biden loses him, becomes a 49-51 Senate, and none of these programs are going to go forward. And from what we can tell, Manchin wasn't impressed. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's pretty much the first 100 days. Joe Biden promising the moon, and you know, the rest of the country not really buying into it. Yes, he has his supporters. Yes, there are those out there who believe in the American Jobs Program. But Biden is coming face-to-face with the reality that he does not govern over a united America. He, no matter how many times he says it, no matter how many times he says that's what he wants, the fact is 75 million people didn't vote for him. And I don't think he's won over any of those 75 million. Moreover, of the 80-some-odd million that did vote for him, he may have lost a bunch of them because, you know, they don't agree with the vision that he's put forward. Being against Trump is not turning out to be enough. You have to actually be for Biden, and Biden hasn't put anything out there that is getting people excited. So I think he gets a failing grade on his first 100 days, and I think his speech will go down in history as, you know, an act of futility. You know, anybody can get up there and promise everything. The real challenge is if you can deliver it. And right now, it doesn't look like Biden's going to be able to deliver on any of his program. If he starts to whittle it down, so that it becomes, you know, a definition of infrastructure that the Republicans could buy into, he's going to lose his Democratic base. They're not going to support that. But if he continues to, you know, trying to incorporate, you know, things that aren't physical infrastructure into an infrastructure bill, he'll never win over the Republicans or Joe Manchin. And that's the vote that counts right now.
You know, at the end of the speech when Biden was talking to some of his colleagues in Congress, he seemed to have a pretty nice, chatty conversation with Bernie Sanders. What'd you make of that?
Look, I think Bernie Sanders has sold his soul to the Democratic Party a long time ago, in 2016. You know, he used to be a man who stood for something. He used to be a man who, who recognized the fallacies of the establishment and the need for, a non-establishment person to come in and shake things up. That was the attraction of Donald Trump. Anybody who doesn't believe the Democrats stabbing Bernie Sanders in the back played a big role in building that final wave of support necessary to push Trump over the finish line ahead of Hillary Clinton doesn't understand politics in America today. There was a big movement that still exists today of people who are fed up with Washington, D.C., as usual. Biden is the personification of Washington, D.C., as usual. Bernie Sanders used to fight the Bidens of the world, but he sold out in 2016 in the name of party unity. And then he did the same thing, taking on Joe Biden. And, at one time, Bernie was honest, saying, I'm against everything this guy stands for. Now Bernie is, firmly in the Biden bandwagon, and anybody who used to support Bernie has to be scratching their head saying, what the heck do you stand for today? That's what I think of Bernie. I think he's basically gone as a viable voice of electoral independence. He's firmly in the camp of the establishment, and he is firmly going to be pursuing policies that are put forward by the by Joe Biden, by the Biden administration.
Do you think his supporters feel betrayed overall?
I do. I was a supporter. I supported him in 2016. I feel betrayed. I couldn't support him in the most recent election. I was a supporter of Tulsi Gabbard because she actually was a breath of fresh air. When I looked at Sanders in 2020, all I saw was the man who caved into the Democrats in 2016. I didn't believe him. I didn't have faith in him. And ultimately, once again, when it came time for him to stand up and fight, he wilted. He caved in the name of, party unity. I think any true Sanders supporter is disappointed. There's a lot of people who support politicians, out of political convenience. And I still think that Sanders provides a modicum of a political cover for those who aren't ready to jump with both feet into the Biden camp and are looking for an excuse to justify why they support Biden. So, people like Bernie Sanders provide that cover. People could say, well, I'm a Sanders person, and because Sanders supports Biden, I'm going to support Biden. And I think that's his utility today, his political utility. But in terms of a truly independent voice of reason, somebody who takes on the establishment instead of embedding himself in the establishment, Bernie's gone, and anybody who believed in the old Bernie has to be disappointed in the new Bernie.
Wow. Now, when he capitulated in 2016, when he started running in for 2020, did you think that he would not capitulate this time?
Well, you could hope. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't even willing to give him a chance. I threw my weight behind Tulsi Gabbard from the start. And by the time Tulsi dropped out of the race, it was clear to me that, the Democratic establishment was angling for a replay of 2016. Clyburn, tipped the scales in South Carolina. Klobuchar and Buttigieg dropped out in Texas. So it was clear that everybody was lining up against Bernie. And at that point in time, I knew that he was going to cave. I mean, I had no faith in the man. That was the time for him to stand up and rally the troops. And he could have. He could have exposed the hypocrisy of the Democratic Party, how this Biden, the man who couldn't garner 2% of the electorate, a liar, a prevaricator, the antithesis of everything Sanders stands for. It was time for the gloves to come off and Sanders to go for the throat. Instead, he caved. You know, he played, you know, gentleman. He went through the motions, and then he withdrew. And how can you support a man who, with one breath, one day says Joe Biden stands for everything I'm against, and then the next saying I'm with Joe? That's called a politician. And frankly speaking, most of America's fed up with that. We're fed up with, you know, two-faced liars, which is what the vast majority of these politicians are. I know people say you have to compromise, you have to, there has to be a give and take, and that's true. But there also has to be some integrity, core values, a foundation of belief upon which you act. And Sanders has shown that his is paper thin.
You know, I just finished reading the book Lucky, and it talked about Biden's 2020 run for president. And one of the first things that struck me interesting was the fact that one of the first person that Biden went to talk to, Al Sharpton, and Al Sharpton kind of has like a tainted history. Why is the Democratic Party so enamored with Al Sharpton?
Well, yeah, you got to be careful how you answer that question nowadays, because people will make, you know, unfounded accusations. But I'm just going to be as blunt as possible. Al Sharpton represents, you know, a category of black politician who has used the oppression of America's blacks over time, especially in the modern era, to build his own political constituency. He thrives mm-hmm. on the suppression of blacks. Joe Biden thrives on the suppression of blacks. If you look at his history with black America, it's basically based on his role as the white savior who rides in to save the blacks from themselves and from the oppression of, you know, the whites. You know, if I were a black American, I would be offended by these people, these especially people like Al Sharpton, Clyburn, you know, Lewis, whom we're, you know, who's dead, and we're not supposed to speak ill of the dead, but, you know, he's a man who, if you take a look at, you know, his constituency, he did nothing for his constituency. He used their suffering to promote his politics. And that's it. So Joe Biden reaching out to Al Sharpton is simply a reflection of the reality that Joe Biden is white political establishment based with their reliable black constituency of these highfalutin black politicians who live in big houses, fly corporate jets, make big paydays on the backs of, you know, black America that, you know, much of whom is stuck in urban poverty or rural poverty. You know, it's just a reflection of all that's wrong with American politics today. You know, the Biden, instead of talking about, you know, policies that will lift all Americans up, because that's what equality is about. Everybody gets an equal chance to bite the apple. Everybody is given an opportunity, and where you need a helping hand, you're given a helping hand. If you did that, you would disenfranchise the majority of the black politicians in Congress today, the majority of the black politicians in House and state legislatures today, because they don't want equality. Because if there's equality, they lose their ability to play off of the suffering to continue their political fortunes. They would now have to compete as honest politicians with other people coming up, and they would probably lose. So, you know, genuine equality is not something that people like Al Sharpton want. He's not going to get the media time, you know, if race relations in America are smooth. He gets the media time when we go through bumpy times, rocky times. He thrives on this. And Joe Biden is a white politician who exploits that for his own benefit. He wanted to reach out to that part of black political America to ensure that he had their support.
And Al Sharpton is on MSNBC a lot. Would you say that MSNBC is jaded? They don't really, you know, exhibit what they're supposed to stand for.
MSNBC, CNN, I believe that they have a political bias that is decidedly in favor of the Democratic Party. I believe the Democratic Party is jaded. Therefore, media establishments that that parrot the Democratic Party line are equally as jaded. I don't view MSNBC as a news source. I view them as a propaganda platform. I mean, I watch it because, you know, you need to understand where people are coming from on important issues, but I don't view it as news. It's a propaganda platform promoting a Democratic agenda at the expense of the Republican Party. That's fair. They can do that, just as long as, you know, everybody understands that when they watch it and they don't think that they're getting unbiased news. Al Sharpton doesn't go on MSNBC to be challenged. Al Sharpton goes on MSNBC so that he can be part of this propaganda service, so he can take advantage of, you know, their airwaves to promote his ideology, to solidify his political base, to rally like-minded people around his cause. That's not news. That's propaganda.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the Republican Party. It seems like the entire Congress, the Republican Congress, is backstabbing Liz Cheney at this point. And I remember you saying you're not exactly a big fan of Liz Cheney, but what's going on?
Well, again, I mean, to be honest right up front, Liz Cheney is the classic neoconservative. Cut out of the same piece of cloth as her father. They call her, Republican royalty. She's the heiress to a neoconservative throne. She's an arch conservative. She's everything that I despise about the Republican Party. So no, I'm not a big fan of Liz Cheney. But remember, Liz Cheney came into political prominence, during the time of the Bush administration. She, served in the State Department. She worked with the reelection campaign, and then she got elected as the sole representative from the state of Wyoming. She's a very powerful person in the state of Wyoming. There's two senators. There's only one representative, and she's it. And she was able to use her name and her political connections to rise up to be the number three person in the Republican caucus. She is very senior. She helped set the agenda. I found that to be disturbing because I think the Republicans harm themselves when they continue, a neoconservative bent. But it is what it is. She's also now become the darling of the left because she has spoken out against Donald Trump. And believe me, there's a lot to speak out against Donald Trump. I'm not going to sit here and jump on the Trump bandwagon and say that everything that comes out of his mouth is, should be treated as gospel. No, the man is imperfect, which is one of the reasons why people found him refreshing, because he wasn't part of the Washington D.C. establishment. He doesn't have Liz Cheney's political credentials, and. So Liz Cheney has spoken out against him. She has spoken out against his characterization of the 2020 election. She has accused him of mounting an insurrection on January 6th. She says that he should be prosecuted. And, she's speaking out against him at a time when Donald Trump still has considerable political muscle to flex. He's proven that even though he's no longer president, he controls through those 75 million people that voted for him, he controls the pulse of the Republican Party right now. He controls the money. He controls the ideology. And for Liz Cheney to line up against him was a risky move for her. Maybe she'd hoped that other people would follow her and line up against Trump. But, I think right now the confrontation between those who support Trump and those who support Biden, is the dominant political conflict in America today, not an internal civil war of those who disagree with Donald Trump and want to support a purist wing of the Republican Party. Republicans look at that conflict and say that's bleeding us away from our primary fight. And Liz Cheney, I think, was told to shut up and sit down. She chose not to shut up and sit down, and now she's going to pay the price. She's probably going to be evicted from the Republican leadership, and she will probably be primaried in 2022. I think the Republican Party is going to throw a lot of weight into getting her voted out of the office. And in this day and age right now, Dick Cheney doesn't carry the kind of weight, political weight that name once did. Donald Trump does, especially in Wyoming. And Liz Cheney's going to be running against Donald Trump, whether she knows it or not, in 2022, and she's probably going to lose.
Why do you think that Donald Trump still has such a grip on the Republican Party? That's what I don't understand.
You got to go back to 2015 when the Republican Party put up their 17 nominees to be candidate for the office of presidency. That was the best and the brightest the Republican Party had. And Donald Trump crushed them all. Not because he's a political genius. He crushed them all because they stand for nothing. They motivate nobody. They are part of a political establishment that the majority of Republican voters had lost faith in. Many Democrats had lost faith in the Democratic establishment. There was this pool of American voters who said, we've had it up to here with the establishment. And while the Democrats were running, Hillary Clinton, who is the personification of establishment, along with Joe Biden, they were running her as their principal candidate, stabbing Bernie Sanders, a populist anti-establishmentarian, in the back in the process. Trump was able to feed off of not only his populism wave confronting the Republican Party, but also Bernie Sanders' populism wave confronting Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders had to drop out. Trump became the symbol of populism. And that's what happened, is that America elected a populist president. For all that's good about that and all that's bad about that, that's what we got. We didn't get a Republican president. And over the course of the next 4 years, Trump used this populism to reshape the Republican Party. The bottom line is the old blue blood Republicans just don't have it anymore. That kind of Republican establishment is gone. It's history. It doesn't you can't do the job. Trump is it. He's redefined the Republican Party for better or for worse, and this is why he's still a force. The 75 million people that supported him in 2020 didn't support him because he had an R next to his name. They support him because his name was Donald Trump. And this is a problem for the Republican Party, because the moment your party has a situation where an individual becomes more influential than the party itself, you're no longer a party, but you're a cult. And that's a sad state of affairs. The Republican Party has become the cult of Trump. And as an American, this is a dangerous situation. This is always why populism has been such a dangerous thing, because it's uncontrollable, and there's no future in it. Humans have a finite life expectancy. They will eventually die. Donald Trump will one day no longer be here. And if a party became the party of Trump and Trump is no longer here, where is that party? Where does it go? So it's a very dangerous time for the Republican Party, but they also, smell blood, and they sense blood in the water. They sense a weakness in the Democrats. They are looking at 2022, understanding that they could win back the Senate. They could win the House. They're looking at 2024 thinking they can win the White House. But you're not going to do that by trying to convince 75 million voters that they should be supporting somebody that they would never have supported to begin with, an establishment figure. They do that by making the voters think that their vote is a continuation of the Trump program, of the Trump ideology, of Trump himself. And I think that's where the Republican Party is. It's a very confused party right now.
So the two impeachments, that means nothing to Trump?
It means nothing to America. It means nothing to America.
Really?
These weren't real impeachments. These were political acts of theater. The Democrats knew that too. There was no real effort to impeach him because he was never going to be impeached. The impeachment process was designed to damage Donald Trump, destroy Donald Trump politically. But because it was an act of political theater, you know, Trump's written it off. Who's talking about impeachment today? No one. No one. When people say Donald Trump, they aren't going, the twice impeached person. They're saying Donald Trump, who has a real shot at the presidency in 2024. If these were genuine impeachments, Donald Trump should have no shot at the presidency in 2024. But the fact that people are saying, you know, if he ran, he could win, means that nobody's talking about the impeachment. And I can guarantee you this, if he does run in 2024, anybody who brings up the impeachment will only strengthen him. It will not weaken him. Because the only people that view the impeachment as anything worthy politically are the Democrats, and they're never going to vote for him anyways. But anybody who decides to rally around Donald Trump has already made up their mind that the impeachments were an act of political theater, they're meaningless, and they only make them support Trump even more.
But between now and the next presidential election, there's going to a lot of stuff might come down the pike. Rudy Giuliani looks like he's in trouble. Trump might be in trouble. So there's a lot of unknowns right now. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. No, I did. I agree totally. I mean, look, in the political silly season, and we're not, you know, the thing about America is, you know, we're now in a permanent political cycle. You know, campaigns have never ended. They just renew again, and that's what we're seeing. We're seeing, you know, campaigns already shaping up. But the one thing that any, you know, political scientist would say is, you know, don't bet all your money on the, you know, on a horse early on in the race, because too many things can happen.
Right.
You know, even up to the last week before an election, things can happen that can sway an election. So. You know, anybody who's sitting here thinking that they know exactly what's going to happen in 2024 doesn't know anything about American politics. You know, Donald Trump could be in jail in 2024, or he could be exonerated. We don't know. But what we do know is that, you know, it isn't going to be a quiet time. It's going to be a very tumultuous time politically for the United States.
So, Scott, we're out of time, and I'm sure that there'll be many discussions in the future. So you've been listening to Scott Ritter. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. And if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Scott. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.